Mom, what the hell's going on?
I don't know. Hey, what does she know?
Nothing.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 374 for the week of Monday, September 27th, 2021. I am Upside Down Bus Hospital David T. Cole, and I'm here with Disputed Protein Bar Sarah D. Bunting.
Raisins? Go ahead and hoard them.
Pre-med student Tara Ariano.
Oh, I'm not pre-med anymore, although I guess it doesn't matter.
And clairvoyant ex-husband Nick Reinbold Jones.
I just got hit in the head with drywall, and now you're in danger.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is an immersive theater director you've heard on this podcast many times. It's Nick Reinwald Jones.
Nick, welcome back.
Yay!
Hello.
We're sorry.
You should be, but
I'm not that sorry. We're here to talk about La Brea, a new sci-fi drama, in quotes, on NBC. It's a typical day in Los Angeles. People stopped in traffic on Wilshire, as happens from time to time, when all of a sudden a dog barks, and the tar at the La Brea tar pits bubbles a little more than usual, and then there's a crack in the pavement, and a giant sinkhole opens up. We did look at the map. Our old apartment not far from the tar pits would be fine.
I was going to say, I did the map research as well, based on that overhead shot. I was like, okay, I think it's like a 25-block radius.
So our POV family, separated mom Eve and her children Izzy and Josh, get separated. Not in the way that she's separated from her husband. Josh falls in right away. While Izzy initially catches Eve while she's going in after him, Eve makes Izzy let go and save herself. Soon, government agents are on the scene saying there won't be any rescue efforts because no one could have survived the fall, but they seem to know more than they're saying. And sure enough, Eve and Josh and a bunch of other people did survive, but where are they? Or rather, when are they?
Ooh.
The only people you've probably ever seen before are Natalie Zea from Justified and more recently The Unicorn. She plays Eve. Karina Logue plays cop/protein bar hoarder Mary Beth. And John Cena from Homicide, I think, and the Chicago shows is Sam Velez, a Navy SEAL turned surgeon.
And some painting in an Oscar Wilde story, apparently. He still looks 32. What the hell?
It's true. The reason you probably haven't seen any of the other actors is that this extremely set in Los Angeles show actually filmed in Australia. The creators, David Applebaum, whose previous credits include NCIS New Orleans, The Mentalist, and that extremely fascist and swiftly canceled crowdsourced crime-fighting show, Wisdom of the Crowd, with Jeremy Piven. Anyone else remember?
I remember you complaining about it.
I sure did. Premiered on NBC Tuesday, September 28th. Only one episode has aired. That's all we've seen. Let's do the Chen check-in. Nick, should our listeners watch La Brea?
I would like to say that there could be any potential reason that I would recommend watching La Brea, but I really, even if you're like morbidly curious, I would say that your morbid curiosity will not be satisfied, so I have to say no.
Okay, Sarah.
As they say in Australia, no.
Dave?
You should, but only with somebody you love very much who will stick with you, and then it's just like a water cooler hour, and that's it. And you never have to watch another episode again. So just watch the pilot, I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Sure.
I'm going to say no unless you are a big fan of NBC's many generally ill-starred sci-fi shows, your Manifests, your Timeless, etc. If that's your jam, then yes. Also Terra Nova, that Fox show that was on for a second.
Oh, Jesus.
Otherwise.
Yeah. At least it had dinosaurs.
Primeval, which was on Syfy.
Right.
I think it started out on ITV and then it was on Syfy and then they spun it off as a Canadian property.
Actually, the dinosaur is a good way to explain exactly where the show is on the spectrum of quality because Terra Nova is a show about like Earth, I guess, or something, but there's still dinosaurs. I forget what the actual premise is. Doesn't
it
really
went back
matter.
In time, I think.
But you had dinosaurs in it.
Yeah.
This show, we're going to be spoiling some stuff. Nothing that you don't discover in the first episode or could probably guess yourself. But the sinkhole world is our world back in the past, but they didn't even have the budget to go into the Jurassic period. They just went into the mammal period. So instead of like dinosaurs, you just got big wolves and
dogosaurs,
saber-toothed tigers. Like, it's a whole level down in animal menace.
Slightly different looking condors.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, that's the gist, is that they couldn't afford the dinosaurs. So they went with, well, let's just go with like the next thing, just like bigger mammals. And that is like the day-to-day death lurking over everybody in the La Brea version of the
which world. Is crazy, because dinosaurs would be easier to animate and cheaper if anything that doesn't have hair is cheaper. But anyway.
Well, and you don't expect them to look organic the way that you might expect a saber-toothed tiger to look organic, which they do not on this.
No, they don't.
It's just a big hulking thing of CGI coming at you.
They color forms.
There's a thing in video games called asset reuse games, where is you buy a license to the Unreal Engine, which is like a big development engine. And then like you can just get on their marketplace, like a whole bunch of cheap shit that people have made for you. Sort of like not making your own dollhouse furniture, just buying dollhouse furniture from Freeman from The Wire, that kind of thing. So then like you get all these games that kind of look the same because they're using the same low cost or free assets. Like, why does that tree look like the tree from, you know, game B? I feel like La Brea is kind of like that they went into some 3D storehouse and just bought the Dawn of Manimal animal set for $100. These are the things that make this show kind of delightful for me.
It's cute. Those things are energy. Cute. They're
Remember
cute.
Zoo?
Yeah, Zoo, for sure.
God, Zoo.
All right, Nick, you're a resident of Los Angeles, actual Los Angeles, not Australia.
Have you ever been attacked by a prehistoric condor?
Yes, first question.
More often
you?
Than you'd think. It's Los Angeles. Like it's one of the biggest cities in the world. Having like a literally like 5 block by 5 block sinkhole in it. Could it be bigger? Yeah. They didn't even take out the fucking Grove, man. No. It's not that. It's literally like the La Brea Tar Pits themselves, LACMA, which like, you know, hey, I enjoy the streetlights and the cool like toy car thing.
The Peterson Museum. Oh no, the cars.
Yeah exactly. I mean, that's like the like glamour shot of LA is the Peterson Museum. Like, come on.
Jay Leno is screaming.
It got to the Peterson Museum, but didn't take out the Johnny's restaurant kitty corner to it. Yeah.
I'm not sure because there we see the stoners sitting on an intact bench. Like it looks like a booth bench. So Johnny's may have been swallowed
poor
too.
Johnny's.
Anyway, is sinkhole now on the list of like natural disasters you like baseline fear as a Los Angeles resident?
No, I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but like, sorry, like it's pretty much, I mean, I've been here long enough that I've sort of like my like earthquake fears that I used to have for many years. I'm like, I'm not so much on my, on my radar, but fire definitely. Although like we live, like Alexis and I are like, okay, we just need to live in a place where we're surrounded by enough pavement that we don't really have to worry about fire
what
as much.
About
but
the
like,
fact
yeah.
that there's no more stew plantations.
That's an apocalypse he lives in already.
That's what would have prevented you guys from getting taken out in this one.
All right. Can we all agree that while the show is very silly and generic, it deserves credit for getting right the fuck to it in the cold open?
And
Sarah, your thoughts. Okay, so Dave, go ahead.
One more just to add to the yes at the beginning is that they portray the La Brea Tar Pits as they actually are. They didn't do that thing where they wanted it to look like tar pits from the Flintstones, which is full of tar.
Yeah.
The tar pits, when you go, basically it's slightly bubbling, dirty brown water. And that's what you saw in the show. So I was impressed they didn't try to CG over that.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they were missing were like the Johnny Rockets McDonald's cups that people throw in the tar pits that are all around the edges. But beyond that, I thought, oh, they did the tar pits well.
All right, Sarah, credit for not dicking around before sinkhole sinks up.
I mean, I think they had no choice. Like, this is part of their marketing, is the sinkhole. I will also give them credit for sound design. That is the sound of it, like, when the buildings are sort of subsiding into the earth. That is what that sounds like. I can unfortunately tell you firsthand. I had no issue with that. I kind of wish that, like, basically the one of the two people of color you see for 15 minutes immediately gets eaten by a CGI crack, but whatever. I appreciated that someone had to pee in a disaster situation. I was thinking of Dave, who yeah. prioritizes toilet strat among his credibility yeah. checklist items.
Ask me about Al Flozin.
But the issue with this show for me is not so much like the bad CGI. It's like, okay, I would watch a show like this for, I don't know, world building and character development. Like, how are people responding to this extremely weird disaster that is actually not that far off base compared to like 5 years, if they made the show 5 years ago? But the reactions of the characters, like, they're all kind of on like day five territorial hostility and freakouts, versus like when you watch The Lost pilot, which is a great pilot, you have a sort of much better, it's a much better reflection of like how like disoriented people are by the situation, but they're still like mostly, unless they're dicks like Maggie Gray, sort of responding to people with the usual like politeness. Like, yeah. Once again, firsthand info, like people do not in the first 30 minutes after something like this immediately start fighting over fucking Luna bars. They just don't. Like, that's day two, hour 36 shit. And after it was clear to me that the writers sort of don't understand how humans might respond to this and couldn't take the time, or were told by the network, like, this is a pilot, you need more conflict immediately.
Mm-hmm. That's the network tapping their watch. Just get to the point. Let's just, don't go through the motions. Just get there.
Right. Yeah. Which, like, it, on the one hand, that the cold open, you're like 90 seconds into it and the earth is just like, I'm, you know, feeling snacky and just eats a bunch of people and spits them out in the past. Great. Right.
That's a good show, that the earth actually becomes the thing and the earth is yes. angry at us and the earth is actually Sarlacc. Early pulls to yes. eat us.
Here I am just yeah. giving that away.
Oh, Sarah, bad choice. You should have kept that to yourself.
Well, but it's NBC. They'll fuck it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree that, like, I did like a like partial rewatch of Lost in the past few months, and like this show is no Lost Kennedy. Like, this is like they even mention, like, they yeah. make a little yes. reference to Lost, and it's like, guys, don't remind people that Lost exists yeah. because you are nowhere near that. Yeah, I mean, the way that the Lost pilot, like, first of all, introduces a lot more interesting characters than this show does, introduces a bunch of crises at once instead of like putting all their chips on one person getting bitten and finding literally finding a bandage is the central conflict of this show, as far as I can tell. Like, they just, you know, they have it, like, they have too many balls in the air and not enough at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this show, this pilot, for what it was, because it really was a time machine back to 15 years ago before yes. streaming services hit. Mm-hmm. Like, this it is so chasing that Lost dragon in the way that every show that this reminds you of, like Invasion mm-hmm. and like all those shows that sort of popped up for like 3 years. I was always like,
Flash,
they came in threes,
forward,
like Rob's,
yeah. the 4400. Yeah. yeah.
It's sort Useless. Of like Lost plus or minus something, mm-hmm. half the budget, yep. none of the names.
Yep.
Let's go. Like, that is this show. And it was sort of fun to revisit that laziness in a network show. I'm not going to lie. Like, I kind of enjoyed the pilot.
And I'd sort of enjoyed some of the extremely clunky, like, we're just not going to take it again because we're in Australia and there's a deadline. Lines like, I know you're busy, but my wife and son fell into the sinkhole is already being recycled in my house. But I, like, just roll up to my husband. It's like, oh, you know, I know you're busy, but my, you know, son and daughters need some kibble. Like, we just started repurposing it immediately because sure. it's horrible. I mean, your mom and Josh are alive. and I'm going to find them. Like, all right, I'm
literally
going
to put a shovel in the ground and try to get.
I know he like digs Simpsons a hole episode with like some egg beaters and is yelling into it like, all right, cuckoo pants.
Yeah.
The FEMA has to get Sting in there to help him dig the hole down to the
dig up, stupid.
Yeah.
Don't you know that Precambrians love their children too?
Yeah. There was so much going on in the pilot so quickly that they forgot that we didn't care about any of the characters. So when like the son gets bitten by the woofer,
that
like it's like, all right, like one less character to keep track of. Let's do it. Let's kill this kid. Like, who cares?
Yes.
Word.
And like lots of just like it was going so fast to where it thought it needed to be at the end of the first episode, which is like everybody's where they're supposed to be. We kind of know the gist that there is this world somehow underneath our world that is our world in the past. Whatever. Right. Just have to travel through the great, great big green vagina to get there. And then like you just after that, it's like, I don't need to watch anymore because I don't really care what happens with any of these people.
Yeah, no.
I just wanted to see how stupid your premise was, how bad your world building was. And it was bad. Mm-hmm. Up to the things like the sinkhole, like in case you don't know, it's like that's Miracle Mile, right? That's what they call it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So Miracle Mile in LA, lots of museums, obviously the tar pits, stuff like that. And it all falls into the pit. And it comes out the other side in these very, very distinct chunks. Like, here's a chunk, and it's got the Wilshire Boulevard sign on it. Here's this chunk, and it's obviously, like, there's no just, like, random dust piles or, like, just shit, like rebar and wire and stuff like that. Like, it is such a set piece collection of garbage that it's just like, oh, come on, guys. You could have, like, messed it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is the other thing where Lost was so much better, because they really did create that chaos of, like, a plane hitting the ground, and, like, here's just, you know, there's shit all over the place. There's no organization to it and everything.
Here comes an engine. It looks really realistic and scary. I mean, I really wanted them to have more fun with it also.
Yeah.
I mean,
before
we wrap this up, which we probably should, because what else can you say? It's bad, and either you're going to have an edible and enjoy it, or you're going to do something worthwhile with your time. I don't judge you either way. But I did wish that they had like a it was only the cat moment where like they're just standing around fighting over the granola bars and like a little tabby just like boing and then runs off. But no. But do any of you think that there was a way to tweak this premise where this might have been like compelling enough for you to keep watching? Like if you just didn't see what was happening in the sinkhole for a few episodes, or if they, I don't know, cast people who weren't everyone's fourth choice all the time.
I know. I was like, how many like people passed on this before?
Yeah, like who was first on this list?
Who you want? Who you could have gotten, who you could have gotten that was willing to go to Australia.
Yes.
That's the levels here.
Yeah.
What I was most disappointed by, like, I think, I mean, and I was disappointed by a lot of things, but it was just that, like, the main, like, you know, like, pre-Earth area, like, old Earth area that they end up in, it's just a fucking field.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, I don't see anything interesting around it. The only interesting things are sort of, like, the objects that have fallen into there. You know, we don't get that, like, awesome, like, you know, like, Jurassic Park shot of, like, all the, you know, dinosaurs around the lake and stuff like that. And so I'm thinking, like, you know, yeah, if this was a more, like, serialized HBO show, we might be like, okay, well, they're saving some of that stuff for later. But, like, this is a network pilot. They're clearly, like, everything cool that we're going to see is probably in here. So it's not like, you know, if you hang in there a little bit, then you're going to get to the fireworks factory. Like, this is when they were showing the fireworks factory.
I agree that, like, what they provided wasn't that stunning, but I disagree that they should have kept it back. Because the higher the concept, the show, and the lower on the rung you are on the quality TV hierarchy, the quicker you got to get to the fucking point. And this show
That's
really
what
got
I'm saying. Like, that, like that's what made me not have.
Because they're going to have to start doing bottle episodes immediately, because they're obviously already out of money.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's in the ambulance forever.
All the money they spent to DH Taron Killam to play the kid, but
The problem with this idea is that all of us have been burned so many times by sci-fi TV shows that just go on past all logic, where they just have to keep like complicating the premise of like whatever the thing is that makes this not just a disaster show. you know, not just Lost, but like all the way back to the X-Files, where it's like there's bees and oil and what the fuck? Like it just keeps getting and frankly, like, I hate to bring it up, but like Under the Dome has completely inoculated me against all of these shows forever, including better ones like, I mean, I didn't say this when we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, but like Why the Last Man, where it's like I don't need to see a show's idea of world building because I already know all the stages it's going to go through. It's going to be like, we're all pulling together, but oh no, someone's a villain who's going to start a black market or like they're all of this shit that just happens because they need to like protract it. So my feeling is like, maybe there could have been something here in a stupid like Event Horizon / The Core / Volcano movie.
Yeah.
But as a show, it's just like, all I know what's going to happen. You're just going to keep spinning this out until it's like so complicated. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. They used to be married. Like, that's a dinosaur.
I know. Right. Yeah. I mean, the network insistence on it being a family is just like, because you know that's a network note. It's like, it's got to be a family. They got to be divorced and all that stuff.
Yes.
Well, I got a way to make this show end very quickly because in the show, they demonstrate that objects, organic or inorganic, can travel through the
green vagina. You've already called it.
Yeah, the green vagina.
The green vagina.
But electronics get scrambled. So how come they just can't lower a like basically 30-foot rope, tie some ropes together, Los Angeles, and just stick it down there, see what happens, and then somebody comes back up. End of show. You just got to like do that like 60 times or whatever, and we're good.
You put Abe Simpson in the suit,
the diving bell. Love it.
It's all a contractor scheme in the end.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
Hello. I watched Controlling Britney Spears on FX. This is the sequel to Framing Britney Spears, the episode of FX's The New York Times Presents that came out. I did have to check it, but yes, it was this year, 2021.
Oh my God.
The timing for releasing the sequel now is probably twofold. There is a hearing this week, September 29th, which is today, if you're listening to this episode. Right when it comes out, and a hearing about Jamie Spears continuing as Britney's conservator. There's also another documentary about this that came out on September 28th on Netflix. So if any of these new revelations in Controlling Britney Spears were going to be in it, I'm sure the Times wanted to be the one to drop them first. So I won't get into all the details. The three main interviewees are Felicia, the former assistant who was also in Framing Britney Spears. There's also a woman who worked on the tour wardrobe in the conservatorship era, and a guy who worked for Adan Yamini, the head of Black Box Security, which is the company that Jamie hired to run security for Britney, and who apparently subscribed to Jamie's philosophy that security should be extremely intrusive to a frequently illegal degree, and that the subject being secured should not know everything that he was doing. And this last guy pretty early on says that Adan watched Framing Britney Spears and was really relieved because his name didn't come up. And as you find out the shit he did, you understand why, because holy shit. All these people were under NDAs that they are breaking for the documentary, which just makes you realize all the other shady shit that happens across all industries that no one will ever know about because of NDAs that no one breaks, which is a chilling thought. Sorry, don't think about it too much or you will be upset. I should note, Britney posted on her Instagram this week that a lot of what you heard is not true, so grain of salt, I guess. Also could just be there's stuff that happened that she didn't know about, which was the point. We know from the news there's been some progress with Britney's conservatorship since the first doc. Jamie has agreed in principle to step down after all this scrutiny, but it seems like he's basically holding out for key money, and you can understand why, as this update lays out how much money her estate makes for him and what kind of a cut he and all of his allies get because of this arrangement. So here is hoping the details here and that effort, because yikes. Yikes. On a lighter note, I also watched The Big Leap. This is a new scripted dramedy series on Fox Monday nights about the making of a dance reality show called The Big Leap. They're putting together a company of dancers to perform Swan Lake in the finale. So in Detroit, we meet a bunch of different characters who love to dance, but for various reasons that make them good reality TV participants, did not pursue it. There's the woman who was going to go to NYU on a dance scholarship and was dating a guy that all her friends in high school knew was definitely gay, but had not come out yet, and who she fooled around on him one time and got pregnant, so that's why she didn't go to college. There's a mommy influencer who has a bad marriage, she finds out in the pilot, to a porn addict. She's also losing followers on her account. This would be a way to revitalize it. She's a former ballet dancer. There is an auto company executive recovering from breast cancer. Her partner is a former factory worker. Neither of them knows she was part of the restructuring team that caused them to be laid off, but the producers do. And there's also a way too handsy pair that judges think are married, but they are brother and sister, and they creep everyone out, which is pretty funny. As our executive producer, Nick Blackburn, we got Scott Foley being a total scumbag. I have to say, love a Scott Foley cast against type. Love him in Scandal. Mm-hmm. Love him here. Like Shiri Appleby in Unreal, he is always making the most immoral decisions about what to shoot, how to pair people, although he's not as hands-on in manipulating people as Rachel was on that show so far. So at the same time, you're like, this is horrendous, but also he is right. That is good TV. He also gets some actually good mean jokes. He is convincing delivering them. And the judges are also great. There's an ex-ballet dancer as the choreographer slash the mean one. And Kevin Daniels from Sirens, love him as the nice one. And the rest of the cast is Terry Polo as the influencer mom, Seth Bob Duca Morris as her husband, Piper Perabo as the breast cancer survivor, and John Rudnitsky from SNL as the laid-off auto worker. I also love dance. The dancing on the show is actually pretty legit. There's a whole routine in the pilot that the couple dances across a bunch of lanes at a bowling alley that was super fun. And I am not proud to admit this about an extremely corny show. It's better than I expected. The climax of the pilot made me cry. Sorry, surprise. I love a dumb show. So if any of this is possibly your jam, check out The Big Leap. It's pretty good. It's on Monday nights on Fox. And for my plug, I am probably, as it may seem, wrote for Defector, a sports site. But of course, it was not about my fantasy football team. It was about Holy Moly and all of the Holy Mole alikes that have followed it into the TV marketplace. So we will link that in the show notes.
Nick.
Okay, so I watched the 45-minute documentary on Apple TV entitled Being James Bond. This will shock those of you who know how much of a ridiculous James Bond fan I am. I do want to preface with a mini rant about how hard it is to watch Apple TV content on anything other than an actual Apple TV. I sat down in front of my computer so I could take notes. I haven't really used the TV app on my Mac that much, but I figured it would be like quite easy. And it's like, I don't understand what the like situation there is, because what I had to do was like quote unquote rent the show for free in order to watch it. Like it's like get your shit together, Apple.
It's because, I mean, do you want an answer?
I do want an answer.
It's because the Apple TV app isn't really an Apple TV app. It is the video part of the old iTunes code ripped out of iTunes and plopped into separate things. So that's why it's got all that false buying stuff, because it's still going through the iTunes motions to happen.
I mean, I get that, but it's like my actual Apple TV is like one of the least expensive Apple devices I own. So why can't my more expensive Apple devices do what that can do?
Absolutely.
So I'm a big James Bond fan, particularly of Daniel Craig, mainly because of Casino Royale. That one movie bought enough goodwill for me to forgive not only most of the Pierce Brosnan era, which was way too silly, but also much of the rest of the Daniel Craig era, which was way too maudlin. Knockwood, that No Time to Die will fall somewhere in the sweet spot. But I've always enjoyed watching the behind the scenes content of the Bond DVDs and Blu-rays. They've always done it quite well. They really get professional filmmakers to make these things. They will dig up the people that, you know, were involved in these movies, you know, from 30 years ago and interview them and talk to them and stuff. So I had high hopes for this, especially knowing that it was going to be specifically about Daniel Craig and his journey. And they, in the synopsis, it said that it was going to be a conversation with Daniel Craig, Barbara Broccoli, and Michael G. Wilson. Those latter two are the people who currently are the, you know, the shepherds of the James Bond franchise. They are the people who own it, basically. And that's why there's been able to be this kind of, you know, consistency, not necessarily in quality, but in tone and stuff over the whole course of the series, is because it's been owned by this relatively small family company. The really weird thing about this documentary is that you literally never see any talking heads in it. It's all dialogue over B-roll, and I sort of got used to that, but it was really weird to be like, oh, it's a conversation, but I'm never going to see the people who are talking. And it's just like, as someone who has put together some like mini documentaries and had to cover, you know, periodically cover dialogue with B-roll, it's like, wow, that's a lot of covering stuff with B-roll that they're having to do in this, and it starts to get a little weird, but it's still interesting. It's good for fans of Bond and Daniel Craig. You definitely get to hear more from Barbara Broccoli, and she is kind of a fascinating person. She's never been like really in the limelight of the Bond movies, but it's clearly like her, you know, whatever you like about the Bond movies over the last you know, decade and a half or so, you really have to credit her for, because she is clearly an extremely sharp and cool person. And like, she's someone who like spotted Daniel Craig like by like the mid 90s and had her eye on him since then as a potential Bond. So it's like there's a lot of interesting discoveries here. But definitely the most interesting stuff is all in the first 15 to 20 minutes. So if you know, you're welcome to watch that much and then tune the rest out. Daniel Craig, as always, is quite endearing. He says things like, as soon as he got the role, he bought some vodka and vermouth in a shaker and started making himself vodka martinis. Then even more endearingly, he says that he was hungover for 3 days after that. And there's also like, there's just some fun bits of candor about his experience doing the role, such as this little bit that I clipped for us.
I mean, I know Pierce, everybody, I mean, Pierce talks about it, but it's like, you know, saying that fucking line. I mean, if I have to say it, I'll say it once to myself. And then you're on set and you think, oh, I'm fine. And then you say it and it's like this, the weight of it. And I think I'm kind of I try and be quite cool about these things, but it's impossible. I mean, I don't know how many takes we did at the end of Casino Royale, but literally there are takes with, the name's Bond, James Bond. It's like a 13-year-old whose voice is breaking.
So yeah, it's pretty That's it's pretty adorable. Fun to hear. Yeah, I know. Cute. I mean, you can't not love him when he's that honest about stuff. They eventually, you know, talk a lot about the process of casting Bond. They remind you how ridiculous it is that people were like, a blonde James Bond? What? And even, I mean, to their credit, the producers are like, wasn't Roger Moore blonde? Like, didn't we already do this? It's a little bit weird to never see anyone actually talking. I was really hoping for like one of those sort of you know, like cozy, familiar interview settings where it's like you need to see a few people who know each other well chatting around a room. I wish it had been that. It's not quite that, but it's still, I would say, worth checking out on Apple TV if you're a Bond fan. And along those lines, if you want to see something with interesting people talking where you do get to see their faces, I would highly recommend going on Hulu and checking out something called Tea with the Dames. I'm surprised at how I have not heard a lot of other people mention this, because it is just like comfort food for the soul. It's Maggie Smith, Judi Dench, Eileen Atkins, and Joan Plowright, four of the greatest British actresses in history. They've all been friends for almost 50 years. And it says in the beginning of the special, they get together for tea at least once a year. And this time they allowed it to be filmed. So it's a delightful, extremely honest conversation. These ladies have absolutely run out of fucks to give. So they will just, you know, they do not pull punches. I discovered it last year on a day when I was in especially desperate need of something easy and comforting to watch. I wish more productions like this existed. It's just, like I said, it's really fun to just see them speak candidly as if the camera wasn't there. Tara, you were gonna
say something? I watched it too, and I also watched it on it when I was sick. And this is how long ago it was, because I certainly haven't gotten sick since I started wearing masks to the three places that I ever go. But yes, it's the perfect thing to watch with some toast and butter and these four broads just being awesome.
And as far as plugging, I don't really have anything in particular. You can find me on Twitter at Reinwald Jones, and my immersive theater Spy Brunch, my immersive theater company Spy Brunch, at Spy Brunch on all platforms. Stay tuned to that if you are a Los Angeles person in particular, because we do have some news coming up about a production coming up in January.
Nice. Cool.
Sarah. Oh, excuse me. Wait, hang on. James Bond, Sarah.
So, Teen Mom, Young and Pregnant. It's back. It's been back for a few weeks. As we're recording this, 3 episodes have aired. Another one is airing. It will have aired by the time you're listening to this. I have not seen it yet. The current crop of this franchise in its 3rd season is new moms, Maddie Sen, S-E-N, who is the official sad sack of the season, as Tara pointed out. She has just broken up with the baby's father. She's thinking of moving to Ohio from Arkansas so that her dad is like going to move in with his girlfriend and she's going to come with because the baby's father is a trifler who cheated on her like myriad times and she's over it. I think her dad is probably 10 years younger than me. So as usual, this is somewhat bracing.
Yeah.
In that regard, there's also another new mom called Kayla J, whom we've barely seen. I have a feeling someone is being positioned to leave the show and then we will see more of Kayla J. I'm not sure. I hope that the person who is leaving is one of the returning moms, Rachel.
Oh, that's not who I would have picked to,
don't like her. I don't want to spend any time with her, but the thing is, she's not my least favorite. She at least is sort of pitiable in her obstinate stupidity and was not given any kind of start in life. And I think some people are just like this until they turn 22. And so like everybody just buckle up because it's Rachel. Kaya, not my favorite last time around, but she does seem to be learning maybe slightly a little how to be less reactive. With that said, someone hashtag free Tieza and Tieza free yourself. I think this may be happening this season. That could be the cause of a meltdown. That means she's leaving the show. Who knows? Brianna also back. I will give her the benefit of some doubt because the pandemic didn't bring out my best self either, but stop making fun of your kid on camera. Stop being such a pissy tween to your mom. Brianna's completely regressed. I'm over it. I hope she moves out of that house and the show. And then there's Kayla. I don't think I understand what the show is trying to do with Stefan's sort of, like, you're totally right, I've reformed moment in a parking lot after his mom, who, along with him, did not remember how old the child is. I feel like the show wants us to keep giving Stefan chances, but I, no, I'm done. He's been banging on for 2 years about how the dad title belongs to him and only him, but again, does not so know his son is turning 3 and not 4. Nobody who cares about him exists, apparently, because if they did, they would tell him to deal with his hair and beard concept so he doesn't look like he just, like, I don't even know, fell out of a tree all the time. This is the most infuriating, this is one of the most infuriating people on MTV, and MTV still contains Neve, so I don't say that lightly. every franchise in the, you know, teen mamaverse has the sad sack, the one who basically has it together and should graduate from the show probably soon. I'm not sure who that is here. Ashley already left because she was just like, oh, I fixed it, bye. The one who is extremely infuriating, but you feel the empathy the show is so good at creating, for her being just, you know, young, unformed. And then there's the one that just has to go. Like, you don't want to watch it. It's making you angry. Tara, if you could kick someone off of the show, who would it be?
Well, you did prepare me for this. I know there was more than one Ashley. There was one that left, or I don't remember what her name was, from the first season, and then there's another one who's just now on Teen Mom 2.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. She got kicked up to the show, as it
were. The major leagues. Was that Ashley of Ashley and Barr, or
yes,
other Ashley?
Yes, oh, she's okay. On Teen Mom 2 now.
Oh, okay. All right, good for her. Glad she's still making money.
Yeah, she's fine. So if I had to kick someone off, it would be Brianna. And the thing is, we are spoiled for choice here, certainly. But Brianna is, I think, not being served by the show because she's so clearly performing that brattiness for the camera because she thinks it makes her look like fun and sassy and like a badass instead of just like a brat.
Yeah. Well, and it gives her storyline because she's not.
She's not doing anything.
Yeah. It's like, I have new friends who are supportive and also have kids and we have like a bubble situation and it's fine. It's not conflict. So I think her mom's also told, like, just nag her more so you fight. Like, okay.
But I don't even think it's that. I think it's just like she's acting like, as you said, like a tween where it's like everything her mother does, she just blows out of proportion in her irritation about it, where it's just like, your mom just noticed that you came to a hard stop in the car. Like, relax. It's not a judgment on you.
Yeah. So we'll see how this season unfolds. Someone, at least one of them, is pregnant, going to be pregnant again, or thinks she is. And it's like, oh my God. please add Marina to everyone's life. Teen Mom, Young and Pregnant, that's on MTV Tuesday nights. I think this is actually, and I've said this before, quite an astounding document of life as it is actually lived in these United States by people without access to, you know, anything they need.
Resources. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So I would definitely check it out. If you like to be depressed and to have, you know, like feminist ire, who doesn't? All right. There's no segue. I write a true crime newsletter. I do it with Eve Beatty. It's called Best Evidence. And this week we're talking about a whole bunch of things, including highlights of Texas Monthly's always excellent true crime coverage, Dominic Dunn and the documentary about him that's on Amazon Prime, and the Netflix Britney doc will come up as well. All of that and some extremely weird trailers for an Aileen Wuornos project starring Peyton List as Aileen Wuornos.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, I survived Chad Michael Murray as Bundy. I'm pretty sure I can get through this. So anyway, One Tree Hill reunion in the true crime space. That's at bestevidence.fyi, and that'll be in the show notes.
I thought you said alien wormholes. I'm like, well, finally, our interests are colliding.
Ancient Peyton List experts say.
Yes. All right, Squid Game on Netflix. If you don't know what this is, I'll try to describe it in very broad terms. It is Battle Royale meets the most dangerous game with like a sprinkling of Parasite in it.
And Black Mirror.
Yeah, and Black Mirror. It is a Korean Netflix production. A bunch of people that are down out of luck and heavy in debt are contacted by a mysterious organization.
Benefactor? Yes.
They are all collected, gassed, and they wake up on this mysterious island. And there are like 400 or so of them are forced to play games. They are promised play games, win a lot of money. And that is true. But all the games are like, if you lose, you're going to die. And the first one is shows that they kill like over half the people in the very first game in the first episode. It is the high concept done well version of the failure that La Brea was in the same kind of way.
Got
right? It is really slick and it is kind of fun and dumb, even though it needs the first two episodes probably could have been
one
or one half. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of setup and there's this whole mechanic where one of the rules of the games is that if the majority of people still in the game vote that they don't want to do it anymore, they will dissolve the game. And they do that. And then like 60 minutes later, they all come back. And it's just this really weird way of introducing more backstory to some of the other lead characters that we haven't touched yet. But that could have been condensed into like one big thing at the start.
Yes. Also, who cares? Like they're all in debt. We get it. Like,
yeah. We're here for the games. Let's see the games. Anyways, it's fun. There's sort of like a couple side storylines going on. Well, the main thing of like there's six games and we're going to space them out, get ready for the next game, what it's going to be. And the games are well crafted. It is a very sort of believable evolution of some of these stupid things they do in Survivor and stuff like that into a you are going to die game. Like, I don't want to spoil the games because that's half the fun. But there's a lot of familiar elements. Actually, the other element I'm going to sprinkle into that description is the Korean game show The Genius from a few years ago, which has sort of a lot of are you on my team or are you not elements that also play into this. Mm-hmm. It is not perfect, but it is certainly a really good popcorn, low-calorie show to watch. We're not quite through it yet. I feel like at the end of it, I'm going to say lose three episodes and it would have been a much better show.
Agree. Mm.
And towards the back half of it, they start introducing the board of shadowy figures, mysterious people that are either running or consuming the games on a high level. And it gets a little too cartoony then, which is saying something for this. But there's a certain unfamiliarity to when they bring in the, you know, the American bigwigs that are here to enjoy people dying. That feels like the same way when American shows decide to bring in the Yakuza or something like that. Right. Like, it's just like, it's, you're not doing it right. Something's off. I can't quite put my finger on it, but you're not doing it right. Anyways, but I still recommend it. It is fun. Certainly, if you like stuff like Battle Royale, even if you were like, weren't quite happy with the way it paid out or it was felt a little slow, I feel like if you're just into high concept violent shit, this show will scratch that itch. And it is pretty visceral too.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of people getting shot in their heads.
For sure.
And stuff
and
like
I would,
that.
I would also say, also like Parasite, it works on the thriller level, but there's also another level where there's like more going on, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of its critique of society and capitalism.
I was going to leave that to you. I was going to touch it because, you know, that's Pinko shit, your realm.
Yeah. And I just read today that apparently it's on pace to edge out Bridgerton as Netflix's most streamed show ever, which is shocking considering it's, you know, it's a foreign show in foreign. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are watching it with, you know, dubbed.
Right. Well, that brings me into my next little thing for this segment, and that is,
dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot. Squid Game did this a couple times. Certainly, I've seen it in other shows I've been watching recently. But stop it with the same episode event info flashbacks. I don't need you to show me the scene I saw 20 minutes ago to remind me of the information conveyed 20 minutes ago. If The Wire can bring back an element three seasons later, and I still fucking get it because I remember what Stringer Bell did whenever. Mm-hmm. Certainly give me the credit to remember something that happened 10 or 20 minutes ago and not have to show me another 10 seconds that I saw 20 minutes ago to remind me of what's happening. Like, I'm a little insulted by it. You know what I mean? Like, I mm-hmm. it's like, oh, sweetie, here's the information, Dave, in case you forgot. I am not a crackpot. Coming up on the next Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday, it is the essential Peter Krause, in which when aliens visit and we have to explain who Peter Krause is, we give him the two most essential things. And then we explain what movie we would sort of like to see him in a TV adaptation of to kind of round out the feeling of Peter Krause. That is available to all supporters at any level. Visit patreon.com/extrahotgrate for more information. And then here on this show next week, EHG Prime, it is the Many Saints of Newark. It's the Soprano movie. And we hope to have Alan Sepinwall here pending something on his end. So hopefully Alan Sepinwall. If not, it'll be some lesser person doing it.
No, it'll just be the three of us.
Well, I stand by my statement.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from David Ellis Dickerson. It is called Show Bible, and David writes, inspired by original Star Trek's A Piece of the Action, where an entire culture was shaped by a book called Chicago Mobs of the 20s, in this challenge, you get to pick a TV show Bible that would become the actual Bible for a colony of future humans. What is the show, and what does this franchise-worshipping culture look like when they get visited 200 years later? I'll go first. What you need to know about this culture is, there are only two ways to seek healthcare, privately from a fussy germaphobe or publicly by calling into a radio show. There is a third option of a live-in physical therapist who also serves as a housekeeper, but that's only for the elites. There is no system of policing as such. People have heard tell of police, but know the system has been retired. Pets are permitted, but must be long-haired and under 15 pounds. Everyone lives in high-rises, and the culture's traditional dishes are lattes, tossed salad, and scrambled eggs, because this culture was based on Frasier, and I should know, I'm Frasier. Nick.
I had Lost on the brain because we were talking about La Brea, and so I pulled up the Lost Bible again. It's sort of a Bible. It's sort of just like a "we promise we know what we're doing" document, which I feel like that in a way that's closest to our United States Constitution, in that there are some clearly defined intentions that I have no idea whether they actually intended to stick to, but that definitely got totally mangled once shit started getting crazy. One of the things they say in the Bible is that Lost will be just as accessible on a weekly basis as a traditional procedural drama, much like the Senate will be necessary to balance out the needs of states with lots of farmland, or to make sure that fucking Joe Manchin has the power to keep people on the other side of the country from getting their insulin. Either way. But going in realism terms, I feel like taking the Lost Bible as our own civilization would basically end us up with the civilization that we have now, for better or worse, mostly worse.
I had a couple ideas, and they don't really have show Bibles, though, so I'll just fire these off quickly, which is, like, first I was like American Gladiators, the syndicated show from way back when, where it was just basic proto wipeout, big galoots, and they're trying to hit you with tennis balls and smacking you with oars and stuff like that. And it was sort of create this Logan's Run-esque society where you have to fight for resources and most people will die young. So you sort of remove the need for carousel. If you've ever watched Logan's Run, when you turn 30, you go into carousel, you float to the ceiling, and you are atomized. Maybe not such a bad idea in theory if we can figure out a way to make people happy that they're going to die young and not to use up the Earth's resources. You know, it's either this or we're going to have to go into a utopia's thing where we just kill people with a virus. Yeah. I am not a crackpot. And then I thought maybe supermarket sweep, which is sort of the same idea, but you have to like kind of perform for resources. But I still feel like that would kind of create a Soviet communism. Some are more equal than others hierarchy. So that wouldn't really work. So I was sort of like going around and around with what actual show Bible would actually be fun to have a future based on. And I don't know what the society would look like. And this is my answer. This is why I filled it in with other ones, because it's just this. The thick of it, where in the future, swearing is like the normal, and there's no concept of swearing because everybody's swearing all the time and saying the worst shit, such as like Malcolm Tucker does.
I would love it. David Ellis Dickerson added, if it helps, you can make the colony's leader be Vic Tayback from Alice. I was about to ask now on mic why that would help. But then when I began to game out Planet Sopranova, I realized Vic Tayback would fit right in. But he's been dead for 3 decades, you point out. Well, he'll still fit right in. Because Planet Sopranova is dying out. It's why the away team from Star Trek USS Callister has been outfitted with tracksuits, gold chains, and insupportably long French mani claws, and sent back to the Potemkin, New Jersey in the Bruce Nebula to teach everyone a very important lesson about not only waste management, but also the potential for territorial conflicts to wipe out entire cultures, as is happening on Sopranova, much the same way that Galaxy Quest's Thermians have seized on certain not entirely helpful aspects of the historical documents. Sopranovans who discovered the Sopranos via a rogue shortwave transmission hundreds of years ago have attached to certain rituals like keeping the heads of one's slain enemies in bowling ball bags, and a sacred observance known as the Barrensing, in which a young man and his middle-aged mentor are marooned in a snowy forest, where they must fight 2 bear cubs in an overcoat, then spend the night in an escape pod with nothing to eat but frozen Miracle Whip. That one's for you, Dave. But the real problem is that the Sopranovans can't stop killing each other, and in fact, the society has become something of a Shirley Jackson Presents Logan's Run 3300 AD situation, because the historical documents also instruct Sopranovans to continue rescuing their AJs from various Darwin Award fatalities. Each successive generation is dumber than the last, and this mission is the planet's last shot, with the Callisterians' help, at pulling out of a lethally moronic tailspin. Oh! And the head of the colony's founder, Vic Tayback, is kept in liquid nitrogen, except when it's hauled out for Holston's Miss, a joyous holiday celebration that is marked by the wearing of members-only jackets, the interminable parallel parking of Mercedes coupes, and the eating of onion rings. End.
Fucking space.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Nick. Take it away, Nick.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about Succession today, a show which is we are all very excited is coming back shortly. The episode I've submitted is season 1, episode 2, entitled Shit Show at the Fuck Factory. Obviously, one of the best TV episode titles in history, but that's not why I chose it, or at least not the only reason. The second episode picks up with Logan having been rushed to the hospital by helicopter, and the rest of the family trying to get caught up. In Kendall's case, he needs to literally catch up with everyone else, since he had ducked out of his father's birthday party to make one final attempt at closing his acquisition of Vaulter, a trendy web portal that's sort of a cross between Gawker and BuzzFeed. However, if the pilot made Kendall out to be a heartless Six Sigma hyper-goal-oriented MBA android, the opening scene of episode 2 makes it clear that Kendall is actually a human being with at least a semi-functional heart. Let's hear that first clip.
Rafa, hey, my dad's in the hospital. Yeah, he had, I don't know what, yeah, I don't know if he's gonna be okay. It's, yeah. So, I don't know, I'm here with Jess. We're just trying to get there. What the, can we just find a way around the traffic, man? Just figure it out, please?
Kendall is definitely not alone in his frantic energy toward the situation. Once inside the hospital, Roman also gives the medical team some grief about whether his father is in, and I quote, the best part of the hospital. Shiv also is very concerned as the doors to Logan's ICU room are closed, leaving only his wife Marcia to tend to him. Nonetheless, Kendall will not be outdone as the family member most intent on making a stink among the hospital staff, as we'll hear in the second clip.
Folks, we need you to wait through there,
yes,
please.
Yes, hi, I'm sorry. We're getting mixed messages here. We have no clue what's going on.
Will we be with you as soon as we have an assessment?
Okay, well, that's not good enough. We need to know what's happening now.
Of course.
The socioeconomic health of multiple continents is dependent on his well-being.
The socioeconomic health of multiple continents.
Kendall's bizarre turn of phrase, and it's not the first, notwithstanding, there truly is a lot riding on Logan's prognosis, and much of this episode is devoted to showing the family trying to come up with a strategy to cover the possible short-term and long-term outcomes of this. And that's not going to be easy. In fact, they're already squabbling about the basic facts of Logan's medical condition, as we'll hear in this clip.
So, look, take me through what happened exactly.
I don't know exactly. It was weird. It happened fast. We were just sitting there and you were talking. Shiv kind of started hardballing Dad.
Wasn't hardballing
him. And then, okay.
Brain hemorrhage doesn't come from some chit chat, asshole.
So it's definitely a brain hemorrhage? Is that what they said?
Somebody said that, right? Somebody said hemorrhage?
Or stroke?
The ambulance.
A stroke is a hemorrhage.
It is.
Yes.
Did someone say hemorrhage, or is it just us who said it?
It could be an aneurysm.
Why aren't we chasing this?
I'll chase.
Hey, is there any, did Dad ever talk to any of you guys about cryogenics?
You're insane. Look, I don't want to be given the runaround by Dr. fucking SUNY Purchase Medical School here. We need to know who the top players are, okay? Who's the top dog in this hospital? Have you talked to Dad's neurologist? Did
Kendall,
he tell us who the top guys
like
are
the king
here?
Of the hospital. We're all trying to do our best, so just fuck off. I'm on it, okay?
According to this, it sounds like a stroke, but it could be an acute subdural hematoma.
Great. Get in there and operate, Dr. Google.
He wants to talk to me about cryogenics. What? Wouldn't that just be typical? All the other billionaires are strolling around in new bodies, but not Dad, because we were too embarrassed to actually discuss it.
He didn't talk to you about cryogenics,
Connie. Yes,
you talked to him about cryogenics because you're obsessed with cryogenics.
I'm not really, Ken.
And what he didn't tell you and what I'm telling you now is that you are an idiot.
Sticks and stones, Kenny.
A lot of shows and films try to define their characters by how they act in a crisis, but Succession truly walks the walk. In that single 90-second clip, we get a great feel for the dynamic among these family members, and how much that dynamic is thrown off by the absence of the man who would normally storm in and shout them all down. Also, if it weren't already obvious from the pilot, this scene makes it clear that eldest son Connor is truly in his own world and irrelevant to whatever power plays are going to unfold. Meanwhile, Shiv's partner Tom is clearly desperate to stay out of the fray, knowing at least on some level that he can only make things worse for himself by opening his mouth. As stated, that leaves the core conflict among Kendall, Shiv, and Roman. Over the next hour, we will see the three of them engage in a rich blend of squabbling, negotiating, emotional blackmail, actual blackmail, faux emotional support, real emotional support, and real fisticuffs. All of it underpinned by a big, fat, juicy sense of entitlement. On that last note, it's fascinating and often hilarious to watch these characters treat the hospital the same way they'd treat any of the hundreds of places they actually do own. My hands down favorite is when Shiv casually sits down in a waiting room chair by walking up behind it, swinging her leg over the top, plopping her butt down, all the while maintaining a facial expression that screams, "I'm ready for my fourth cocktail." On the corporate side of things, we see Waystar Worko's various business divisions quickly set up their own outposts inside the hospital conference room. And we also see that Kendall is not ready for the level of responsibility that could be thrust on him in an instant. He makes the mistake of revealing some of this vulnerability in a semi-public setting, but when the vultures start swooping in and phrases like, "you're in no fit state," are thrown around, Kendall rallies like a champ, successfully rewriting recent history by claiming that Logan was already being impacted by his stroke when he disinvited Kendall from being CEO. Jerry, the company's head legal counsel and everyone's favorite, is happy to go along with the story as long as the other family members agree, and there's the rub. This is a lot of plot medicine to go down without a spoonful of sugar, so thankfully this episode also develops cousin Greg's story in some entertaining and important ways. To be honest, Greg's goofy, vomit-filled introduction in the pilot is one of the few beats I don't love about that episode. It's just a little too broadly comedic for the overall tone of the rest of the show, but episode 2 gets him back on track beautifully. He's already been vaguely sort of promised a job somewhere in Waystar Royco, but Logan is the only one who knows about that conversation, so Greg is more or less back at square one, and it's hilarious to watch him somehow try to blend in to this disgustingly rich family in the hopes that merely appearing to be one of them will lead him to success. The first real opportunity he gets, or so he thinks, comes when Roman asks him to go back to Logan's apartment to retrieve the copies of the aforementioned trust documents, and while he's at it, grab one of Logan's sweaters as a sort of security blanket. Unfortunately, though, Shiv has taken Greg's last $20 bill in the world to buy some diet soda, so when it comes time to pay the cab fare, Greg finds himself in a bit of a pickle between the cabbie and Logan's doorman, as we'll hear in this clip.
"Hey, man. Sorry. I'm really sorry, but I don't have any money for the cab."
"I'm sorry, sir. Do I know you?"
"Yeah, I was here a little early. I got assaulted a little in there. So can you pay for the cab, please? She was supposed to call, but maybe she didn't because there's an emergency happening."
"Sir, and I'm sorry. I don't know who you are."
"Okay, so he's not going to lend me the money, so I don't know. Pretty much he owes you your money."
"He owes me?
You better give me the money, dude. You guys need to work this out for yourselves because basically one of you guys hasn't got $14, okay?"
"Yes, ma'am. Hello, Mrs. Roy."
Of course, the dialogue is great here. That's why I clipped it. But this is also one of those scenes you could watch on mute and still enjoy just as much because Nicholas Braun's physical acting is so fantastic. He absolutely nails the experience of a big person who often feels small and awkward. And since I'd also put myself in that category, I know wherever I speak. And if you really want to drill down into metaphor and meaning, you could see this encounter as a microcosm of the way that the super rich always manage to outsource their problems and conflicts to people far below them on the socioeconomic ladder. But talking about this scene more generally, it's a great example of how the show derives some of its greatest comedy out of moments of genuine tension. And for Greg's character in particular, not just tension, but something close to terror. At this point in the series, he is sitting on a knife's edge between poverty and ludicrous wealth, which the show emphasizes by quickly cutting to that triumphant burst of regal music as Greg finally enters Logan's apartment. Meanwhile, Kendall's quest for power is definitely hitting some bumps. He can't participate in the official board plan for succession because that would require former COO Frank to become chairman of the board, and Frank doesn't want that job because Logan fired him. So now Kendall has to convince Shiv and Roman to go along with Kendall being both CEO and chairman. Let's hear him give that his best shot in this clip.
I'm just informing you, Roman is a board member and Shiv is a shareholder. I'll be taking temporary charge as CEO and chairman. Frank is not interested in the position at present.
No, I'm sorry, but even if we were talking about this, which we are not, it wouldn't necessarily be you.
I'm sorry, then who the fuck would it be?
I don't know. I don't... anyone. It could be me.
Are you insane?
Dad made me COO.
I don't think so, dude. Dad wasn't thinking straight.
I think he was.
You, the chief operating officer?
Yup.
I mean, if that wasn't a sign he was loco in the coco, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well, I don't see it that way.
Come on. It was a negotiating position, Rome. He was fucking playing you to get you to sign the change of trust. Do you even know what it fucking involves? I mean, he conked out mid-game.
Are you calling me a dipshit?
No, I love you, man, but you're not a serious person.
All right, fuck you. He's alive. You're not the fucking boss.
All right, come on. Just not throw shit around. Look, we're in the middle, so let's just sit tight. No sudden moves.
Well, we need to move. The markets are going to want to know who's behind the wheel. We need to control the narrative.
Control the narrative. You probably yell that when you come. Oh, control the narrative. Oh, control it. Control the narrative. Oh.
Fuck you.
Of course, Kendall's attempt at controlling said narrative backfires in a spectacular fashion, and Valter, the company that he owns, uses every ounce of their editorial independence to run a late-breaking article about the current state of the Roy family entitled Shit Show at the Fuck Factory. This leads Kendall to be even more forceful in his attempt at persuading his siblings to back his ascendancy, but they're really not having it, even as they basically acknowledge that there isn't actually a specifically better option. The only person that Roman and Shiv could secretly agree on was Jerry, and she turned down the offer for what will turn out to be an extremely good reason. But once Kendall is able to get Roman alone and backtrack on some of his earlier smack talk, he does convince his younger brother to back him as chief executive with the proviso that Roman be his right-hand man as chief operating officer. This still leaves Shiv to be persuaded, as well as Connor, who has suddenly decided that he doesn't want to be neutral. But to Kendall's credit, he finally puts on his big boy pants and makes an argument that isn't so easy to shoot down, as we'll hear in this clip.
Look, it's a gamble. It's either me and Roman and us as a family, or it's Ava and Carl, or some fuckface suit from the deep state of the company. They could take the company out of our hands, and we'd never get near it again. If Dad wakes up and he's frail and he's looking at the end game, you want to be the one who tells him his family business isn't family run anymore? I mean, maybe you could get away with it. You know, his favorite.
Oh, fuck you.
But maybe you wouldn't stay his favorite if you gave away the firm. Look, we need a statement by 6:30. So you just have to think, like, bullshit aside, who do you think, really, Dad would prefer?
Kendall's gambit slash gamble does succeed in the end, even with Shiv loudly voicing her reservations. And as the episode draws to a close, the other senior executives welcome him into the fold. But no sooner have hands been shaken than Kendall is pulled outside by Jerry for a talk about the facts of life, as we'll hear in this final clip.
There's a huge debt problem.
What do you... No.
Yes.
No, there's not.
$3 billion.
Fuck off. I'd know.
No one knows. Well, me and Frank.
What about Dad?
Yeah, your dad, hence the debt.
Jerry, what the fuck is going on? Where did the money go?
In 1985, Logan needed cash badly for the expansion into parks. So he took out a loan through the family holding company. He knew that besides Frank, none of the other board members could see what was happening. And then he added that loan to the company's already considerable debt.
Son of a bitch. Okay. Okay. We can deal.
Yeah, but Kendall, the thing is, it's secured against Waystar stock. And when the stock hits 130, they can pursue repayment in full, which if they decided to do that would eviscerate us.
Yeah, but there's no precedent for that. They'll never do that. They'll renegotiate.
Well, that depends.
On what?
Well, you see, the banks know that the man they invested in can no longer function. As far as they're concerned, you're just some kid with nice hair.
You're making it quite fucking difficult to savor this moment, Jerry.
Sorry about that. Don't jump.
Well, shit. We end the episode in Logan's private ICU suite with Marcia remaining resolute at his bedside, and just as she falls asleep in a chair, Logan finally opens his eyes. As I said up front, the second episode of any series inevitably has a lot of heavy lifting to do, and this episode does an extraordinary amount of said lifting without breaking a sweat. There's a lot of plot jammed into this hour, more than I could cover. I didn't even mention Tom's awkward, pathetic proposal to Shiv and Shiv's mealy-mouthed, sort of positive response, but that scene and so many others are perfectly executed to lay the groundwork for many of the arcs that will play out over at least the first two seasons and probably longer. On the flip side, this episode is also a beautiful self-contained story about Kendall and his siblings establishing enough of a detente to move forward as something resembling a unit. We can talk about Succession being one of the most bingeable shows in history. We can acknowledge that it has a lot of soapy aspects to it, but at the end of the day, virtually every episode can also stand alone as a compelling piece of storytelling. And to me, that's the difference between a show that is truly excellent and not merely addictive. Shit Show at the Fuck Factory sets out a clear mission statement for the rest of Succession. It promises that the series will maintain a breakneck pace and laser focus on the most compelling character and plot dynamics, whether those dynamics are being explored in an actual palace or a hospital hallway. The intricacies of the script demand that the cast members have an incredible amount of chemistry already in place at this early stage, and I hope the clips I presented prove that the actors were absolutely up to that challenge. As those of us who have watched the entire series can attest, there is an incredibly long and winding narrative road to be traveled from this point on, but in terms of quality, Succession has already arrived and is doing donuts in the front yard. With that said, I leave it up to the rest of you. You can vote this episode into the canon, or you can fuck off.
There it is. But Dave thinks I should go first, so I will. And I will use this opportunity first to say the Succession podcast that I did with Dave Chen, The Sweet Smell of Succession, is coming back for season 3. So you can start hearing that shortly after the show returns, as Nick said, on October 17th. And we will link that in the show notes if you are not already a subscriber from season 2. The problem with a show like Succession for the canon is something that we say often, which is, when a show is kind of uniformly great, you have to be more critical about, like, which ones are the most special of an almost perfect special show. And I don't know if this is one I would pick. I agree with everything you said, especially that the second episode is sort of a restatement of the first episode in a TV show. And to me, that in this case is kind of a deficit, even though, to your point about, like, we were promised wealth porn. I'm not going to sit here and say we don't also see wealth porn in seeing how the Roys get treated in a healthcare setting. You know what I mean? They make it seem pretty nice. They even get their own waiting area. And I love the detail that when Kendall goes off about, like, the socioeconomic health of many nations depends on this, like, we see just for a second, they're in a common waiting area with, like, other normies who are just sitting there watching him be a complete asshole about this. Like, their problems don't matter. As in Succession always, like, you know, normal people do not exist. They are not considered people in this universe, basically. Agree with you about Greg, that him, you know, that he has this idea that if he just loiters around the Roys for long enough, he'll be able to get in with them. And yet, that's what happens, basically. Like, Tom sort of is the one, as we see in this episode, who takes him under his wing. To sort of be like a sub-Tom, you know, possibly so that Tom isn't at the bottom of the totem pole anymore, that there's someone below him that can eat all his shit for him. But, and I also agree about the physical acting of Nicholas Braun, and just in general, the tall, short framing of this show. I think many people have observed they have, like, hired all the tall actors for it, and they're, like, never make the short ones not look short. Like, they're always in a frame together, looking ridiculous. I don't know if I would. This just wouldn't be one that I pick. It's too wonky. And that last clip that you played with the whole debt discussion, like, when people were trying to hook me on the show in the first place, like, that's the kind of thing where I was like, I'm too dumb for this show. And, like, there's less of that sort of detail about, like, how the business stuff works going forward. And I think that's why. Because when they start having that exchange, it's just like, you know, the donkey in Homer's brain, like, doing a dance or whatever. So I'm just like, I cannot process it. And two other just wonky notes in my role as internet cop. Anyone who made a South Park, oh my God, we killed Kenny meme about Logan Roy in the year 2018 would get laughed off social media.
Yeah.
Frankly. is A, and B, a headline on a blog post about this would never be shit show at the Fuck Factory. It would be like, waste our Royco shakeup, colon, shit show at the Fuck Factory. Yeah. Like, that. Not that they wouldn't swear in a headline. Gawker does it all the time, but like,
it's
or
just
did.
Not good SEO.
What time is the Oscars on, colon, shit show?
Exactly. It's bad. It's bad SEO. Sarah is right. And in general, I don't feel like they 100% have a handle on who the characters are yet. Like, broad strokes for sure, but like Kendall saying Loco in the Coco, it's just like, that's not a Kendall
him?
Line. Like, I
yeah,
know
no.
he does shit to try and seem cool, but that rang false to me. So
that's a Connor line, and I watched three
yes
episodes
it
of
is a
show.
Connor line. Yeah. So I appreciate the presentation, and you definitely gave yourself a tough task with this show, because as I said, like, these are such niggling problems that like in a lesser show you would never notice, but Succession is so good that you have to. So that's my take. Dave, do you want to go next?
Sure. I largely agree with you, Tara. I found that start of this show very hard to sort of like warm up to, and I feel like a lot of it is because I don't think the actors have imbued their characters yet with those little details that make them very, very distinct from each other. Right now they're all sort of rich brats, and the further you get into the show, I feel like the more you appreciate Roman as, you know, the weaseliest of them. And
you get a bit of that in this episode with Roman, like, trying to sit cool in the chair in the lecture hall.
Right.
And, like,
yeah.
The back keeps bouncing and he can't settle. But,
right.
But yes, I agree with Dave.
But it becomes much more refined, effective as the show goes on. And pairing that with the fact that, you know, you have an embarrassment of riches when you are trying to pick an episode from the show, because they're all quite strong episodes.
Yeah.
You know, you have to just take that into consideration. There's a lot of good moments in this episode when it comes to little demonstrations of how oblivious rich people are to everything that's happening around them, putting a $20 mm-hmm. bill in the vending machine to try to get some Cokes.
That they never have cash. Like, this is such a, you know, this is how the Rockefeller con was able to work.
This is my last 20. Thank you. And she takes the 20 from Gray. Like,
yeah. Get cash from Colin. That's what Colin is for.
Asking, is this the best part of the hospital? Is like such a rich person, dumb question. There's like elements of that. And you get more and more of that as the show goes on. I would say maybe a little crisper. I just want to say, I love the line talking about how useless somebody is, that your mom would have been happier giving birth to a can
opener,
because at least that is useful. Mm-hmm. It is, mwah,
yes.
Great line. So, you know, you do get glimpses of how on point they're going to get as the show goes on.
Yeah.
It's hard when you start a show that ends up being a very consistently strong show to go back to the start and put that up against everything else that comes after, because you are just going to get better at it. Either going to get canceled or you're going to get better at it. It's sort of like Breaking Bad. You know, like Breaking Bad started good, but it got great.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if you go back to those first few episodes, you're like, okay, well, I can see where they're going and I can see what they're doing. And that bathtub scene was really great. But Jesse Pinkman wasn't quite Jesse Pinkman yet. Walter White wasn't quite Walter White yet. Like, you know, they were like almost there. But as everybody got more comfortable in their shoes, the characters became that much better. And I feel like that's what we're dealing with here.
There's definitely stuff that firms up in the first few episodes of Succession that changes, like, people forget. And if you're going to do a rewatch, keep an eye out for it. In the pilot, Roman has a daughter that like never comes back.
Yep. Like,
there's stuff they hadn't totally locked in on yet. But
Lots of really great moments that I think, you know, signal that this show is going to be very, very strong. Like, just like weird lines, like words are just complicated airflow. Like, what? Like Tom walking in on the siblings fight and just
and then being like, nope,
doing a Homer Simpson in the bushes backup.
Completely.
You know, if I say no, not canon worthy, is certainly not like unwatchable. It's very strong. I just feel like you're dealing with a lot of great material to follow.
Yes.
Sure. I, you know, don't know the show as well, but I think that, first of all, I wanted to keep watching it, which is, you know, the Bunsey criterion, TM. And second of all, I think that to Tara's point about the debt discussion and it being kind of opaque and like that they decided not to do that, like as much going forward, which that's fine. I can watch CNBC if I give that much of a shit about debt structuring. But I think the point of that is to remind viewers that, like, the, you know, like Murdoch's debt structuring, like Donald Trump, like this is how rich guys stay rich.
Right.
Is counting on people not to be like, I don't understand that, and not fucking ask any questions. And that is a perfect, like, the way that this show is about rich people who actually technically are like too stupid and venal to still be rich. It's just one of those like Marie Celeste situations where like the ship just sails itself after a while. Mm-hmm. Is flawless. Like not just the details on the personal side where like Shiv probably doesn't have pockets on anything she owns because she doesn't have to carry cash and she doesn't know how to drive and they don't know how to conduct the business of living.
Yeah.
But also on the business side that like so much of the corporation that is America depends on the ignorance and impatience of basically everyone, including people who are part of these deals. And I thought that part was right on. I thought there were many little observations within the acting, like how delighted Tom clearly is to have someone to shit downhill onto in Greg. He tragically, you know, like whatever, like that line is amazing. Connor, just like Alan Ruck, just sort of cheerfully being that guy who's like, you know, and I don't know how this, like, I do know how it evolves because eventually every single episode of the show is going to come up for the canon and that's how I'm going to end up watching the whole thing. But it's like, which is fine, but just these little nuances, like the Jeremy Strong is so good at riding that knife edge of this kind of person that is like mostly hateful, but occasionally there's this pitiable moment that you're like, you don't know how to fold a shirt. What is that? Like, I don't want that life, actually. You can't self-soothe. You're too rich. So especially since this is the second episode, and that they're throwing a bunch of like fucking boardroom intrigue at you in episode two, when everyone's wearing like these horrible like holiday sweaters, like Shiv looks like shit.
Yeah.
Nice of that. I hate that character so much. Whenever she gets told like she does by her stepmother, I'm like, yep, check, canon worthy. But that's also really like the way that they're clearly setting things up, like, you know, is this as good as it's going to be? Maybe not. Is this the absolute best episode it ever aired? I just based on what I've seen, I don't think it is. But the degree of difficulty here, I think, is high enough that we should consider putting it in the canon. I suspect I'm going to be outvoted by more expert voices, but fuck off.
All right, let's put this to the vote. Tara.
With respect to the excellent presentation, I'm going to say no, just because of the extremely high level of the whole series.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that too. Sarah?
It's a yes for me, dog.
All right, that means...
Sorry.
Unfortunately. Fred.
Well, two of you are written out of the will.
Two of us are fucking
Nick
off.
Nick Reinwell Jones, you must now fuck off yourself. Because Succession, Season 1, Episode 2, Shit Show at the Fuck Factory. You hereby not inducted into the extra hot gray canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and loser of the week. Who has this week's winner?
I have this week's winner. It is the restless ghost of Wink Martindale, who may not be dead. I'll check that in a moment. It's actually Tic-Tac-Toe, which is getting a revival hosted by Tom Bergeron, who should not have been allowed to leave his last job. But since he was, we're all winners because now he can do what he wants. He wants to do this, and I'm looking forward to it.
Any word on the fate of the Tic-Tac-Toe dragon?
No. <Who's- laughs> I believe he ate Wink Martindale, I think that was.
I feel like instead of the dragon being like the VIC-20 pixel character on the Tic-Tac-Toe screen now, it should be like an in-universe mascot like Chunky from I Think You Should Leave. Yeah. The guy doesn't quite get it.
Update. Wink Martindale, still alive as of this writing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Good for you, Wink. Loser of the week.
Well, I just want to note before I say it that we are going to start putting all of our reject winners and losers into our Discord for our Patreon supporters. So if that's something that you want to see, just a huge dump of TV headlines.
Yeah, sometimes these lists get into the couple dozens before they're whittled down to
several
one,
screens. So, yeah. So
even though we had a lot of extremely worthy losers this week, I have to go with Deborah Messing, who last week took to Twitter to write after the announcement of the first three hosts of SNL for next season. Deborah Messing tweeted, "Why Kim Kardashian? I mean, I know she is a cultural icon, but SNL has hosts generally who are performers who are there to promote a film, TV show, or album launch. Am I missing something? I can't improve on this Jezebel headline, which is, please let Kim Kardashian triumph in this non-existent beef with Deborah Messing subhead. Debating why Kim Kardashian is famous is boring. We all know why. It's true." Like, this ridiculousness of this complaint, especially mere months after fucking Elon Musk hosted SNL, is so preposterous. And like, God, no one tell Deborah Messing that Trump hosted when he was running for president.
Like, cut to the chicken skit. Jesus Christ.
It's so stupid to come for her this way. Like, what do you expect to gain? This is like, everyone's going to think you're a good feminist because you attack this woman. Like, do I want her to host? Not particularly, but you know what? I don't watch SNL, so I also don't care. Like,
also, she might be promoting her true crime show, which actually was not bad. Like, I don't need to watch it anymore, but she was trying to do something.
Yeah.
And that thing was not being Lucille fucking Ball. So fuck off.
As they say in the ancient Chinese proverb, the best time to attack Kim Kardashian was 2003. The second best time is never.
Speaking about the best time to attack, do you know what time it is? I just realized that Shit Show at the Fuck Factory is the very boring title from the In Thick of It universe that is created by the show Bible Becoming a Religion from Extra Credit. All right, welcome to back to Game Time. It is the 10th Game Time of the season. The scores are, get this, Tara with 4, Sarah with 4, and Value Guess with 1. So if Nick can win today, he'll prolong the season at least one more week. Mm-hmm. Today we're playing One Letter Off again from Erica, who earns herself an extra credit topic. To remind you, in One Letter Off, one letter in a TV show title has been changed, and you will give a synopsis of that new title that blends something ridiculous with the show's original premise. Mm-hmm. Identify the new show name, 1 point, no hints, that's it.
Okay.
Let's throw it a picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, Tara, Sarah, Nick is our order today. Are we ready to play One Letter Off?
Do you want to know about Steel Meals?
I do want to know about Steel Meals, Tara Ariano. Thank you for the reminder.
All right. The Steel Meal situation is as follows. Sarah D. Bunting has 1. I have 10. Value Guess has 2 plus the Eric meal. And
Eric's meal.
Eric's meal.
It's like Lorenzo's oil.
Got
or
it.
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. And there are still 2 Steel Meals Dave has to distribute.
Yes.
At his discretion.
They may come into play. Let's see. Okay. All right. Let's get into it. Tara, first show is Clark Kent just can't stop procrastinating. Clark Kent just can't stop procrastinating. One letter is changed and becomes this show. What is that show title?
I don't know.
She does not know.
Steel
Mill.
Steel Mill.
Steel Mill.
Stall World.
Wait. Nope. Incorrect.
Oh, shit.
That is, just pausing to see if Sarah was going to get in there, Stallville.
Stallville.
Smallville, Stallville, not World. Close
you hate
no
to
cigar.
See it, Nick.
Nick Reinbold Jones on brand with the Steel
Burning
Meals.
Burning through the Value Guest Steel Meals, as is my wont.
All right, Sarah D-Buddy. Carrie attempts to prove that Brody was turned by Al-Qaeda by learning to play a whole lot of instruments at once.
Home band?
Home band.
Yeah.
One person band. Yes, home band. Nick. Sam, Carla, and Norm all have amazing asses.
Oh, that's got to be cheeks.
That's good for one. Back to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI needs your help tracking down the fugitives with the biggest trousers.
America's most panted?
Yes, America's most wanted. Change that W to a P. America's most panted. Sarah.
Yeah.
The Dharma Initiative is just a parasite that latches onto people on the island.
It's just a parasite that latches. Oh, host?
Yes, host.
Nick. Building suspense.
I was like, Wask? What?
I really enjoyed this one. Nick. An accident-prone tool man is sent to fix up the Taj Mahal, St. Basil's Cathedral, and any number of sports stadiums.
Dome improvement.
Yes, correct.
Oh.
Tara.
Yeah.
A bunch of slacker teens get stoned in a basement during Wisconsin blizzards.
That's 70s snow.
Sarah. Nice. A little girl goes on adventures with her backpack and monkey while being an incorrigible dweeb.
First of all, we need to bring dweeb back into the discourse. Is this dork the explorer?
Could be any one of us.
That was Dork the Explorer, correct?
Dork the Explorer, that's good.
All right, back to Nick. Believe it or not, Maggie Gyllenhaal's brother has never had sex. Now imagine me saying that with a very sultry Latin accent. Believe it or not. I'll try it.
Oh, Jake the Virgin.
Thank you for saving me from having to fulfill
cancel
that promise.
Yourself.
Tara.
Yeah.
Barry Allen has the fastest toilet in all the land.
The flush.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Upon their arrival to Grunkle Stan's mystery shack, Dipper and Mabel are no longer tethered to the earth.
You've watched one. It's in the. We did it for the canon. I did.
Mm-hmm. Are no longer tethered to the earth.
Go in a pig.
I'm not sure of the show, so I can't pull the pun. I don't know. Someone want to steel mail it?
Anybody? No steel mails. Anybody know it?
Gravity fails.
Gravity falls. Gravity fails.
I was like, Adventure Climb.
Yeah, I knew it was something. Yeah.
All right, Nick. The Midnight Society tells you spooky stories about Yosemite, Acadia, and Yellowstone.
Tales from the Parkside?
Good guess, not correct. That is, Are You Afraid of the Park?
Okay.
The Midnight Society.
We are all tied up.
Everybody's got one more question before our first score break. Tara?
Yep.
Sexy lifeguards run in slow motion to protect baby sea turtles as they make their way to the water.
Oh, no. Oh, Bay Hatch?
Bay Hatch, yes.
Okay.
Sea turtles hatching.
Nice pull.
Making their first journey to the ocean.
Sure.
Sarah, 12 con artists gather in a tent and try to fool Paul Hollywood.
The Great British Fake Off?
Or
faking show?
Yes, exactly. Nick.
I feel like that deserves a Dave point for being able to say it both ways.
There you go. All right. One Dave point.
It's back, you know.
Nick. Also, this is another one of my favorites. Follow the evidence and use science to determine who's using condensed air to commit crimes in Las Vegas.
Oh, PSI.
PSI is correct.
That's good.
That'll take us into our score break. Tara.
Well, I don't think we're going to need an equalizer challenge because we are all at 4 points.
All right. Ooh. That's right. I guess we don't need it. All right. Let us just move on then. Back to Tara.
Yep.
At the end of his rope after high school, Zach Morris finds new purpose as a matador.
Waved by the bell?
Steel meal.
Sarah D. Bunting with the steel meal.
Saved by the bull.
Bull!
Correct.
That is
I was thinking like the cape. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, if you're a matador, the bull isn't usually saving you, and you are doing waving, so I feel like that could be a valid one.
It saved him from, you know, his depression at the end of high school.
Yes.
His career change really brought him out of the muck. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your actual question. It's time to harvest the wheat, but you don't have to take my word for it. I think this one, you either know what that means or you don't, and I think we might be too old to know.
No, I watched that show.
Okay.
Can you read it again, please?
It's time to harvest the wheat, but you don't have to take my word for it.
No idea.
Anybody know it?
Is it Reaping Rainbow?
Reaping Rainbow is correct.
Rainbow, yeah, okay. Didn't watch
Nick. Angela Chase and Rianne Graff get married, but don't act like it.
My so-called wife.
Yes. Tara.
Yep.
Oh, that was question. This is question 19. No, 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 19. A painkiller addicted doctor who's also a rodent keeps thinking the diagnosis is lupus.
Mouse.
Yes, mouse, mouse MD. Back to Sarah. The scariest thing about the Upside Down is that the Demogorgon is swole.
Stronger Things?
Stronger Things, yes.
Nice.
Make that conceivably Stranger Thongs if you
only in the competitive environment.
Continuing the recent trend of Nick getting questions that Sarah wished she got, inmates at the Oswald State Correctional Facility are nonchalant. You just said the answer. You didn't know it, but I just heard, oh. And that is the answer. Oh. O-H.
I knew it was pulling from... I was going to guess okay, but...
Probably the only answer you can just mistakenly come out of your mouth this game. But I'm going to give you the credit for it.
Okay.
Tar.
I'll take it.
Yep.
Casey McCall and Dan Rydell argue endlessly over baseball, tennis, and the like, night after night on CSC. I mean, this is kind of the show, too.
I was going to say, where is the twist?
They hurt each other.
Oh, okay. Oh, argue. Okay. Sports fight.
Yeah, sports fight. Sarah, a mystery author and homicide detective team up to solve bovine mysteries.
Oh.
A mystery author and a homicide detective team up to solve bovine mysteries.
Bovine mysteries?
Yes.
Okay. Oh my God, this is going to be so obvious. A mystery author and a homicide detective.
It's not Columbo.
Columbo. Mooder, she wrote. Where is the letter? I feel like it's Castle, but I don't know where the cow
bovine
comes in.
Bovine.
Yeah, bovine. I know what a bovine is. I don't know the answer.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Stay bell for Nick.
Cattle.
All right, Nick, here's your actual question. Animated insects go through puberty.
Animated insects go through puberty. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of a show with animated insects on it or the tick or is that. I'm stumped.
Yeah, you're approaching it the wrong way. The insects are the introduced element into Big Mouth, Bug Mouth.
Or Big Moth, if you're subtracting a letter.
Tart.
Yep.
Princess Di and Queen Elizabeth are really sick of all these people hanging around.
The crowd?
Yes. Sarah, two contestants play competitive tic-tac-toe by asking questions of celebrity shield bearers. That's a long walk, but that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's good.
Can I hear it again?
I just got it.
Yeah. Two contestants play competitive tic-tac-toe by asking questions of celebrity shield bearers. My liege.
My liege. Don't know. Sorry.
The answer there, anybody?
Is it Hollywood Squires?
Hollywood Squires, that's correct.
Nice. Oh, nice.
That's
Nick,
good.
Mr. Moranis, Mr. Astley, and Mr. James, and 27 others like them take over the writing of a fictional sketch show comedy in New York.
Okay, so we're talking about Ricks. Ricks. Oh, man, a fictional... Oh, 30 Ricks.
Oh, well, I'll give it to you. It's 30 Rick, but I understand why you, your brain went Ricks. 30 Rick from 30 Rock. Tara.
Yep.
As soon as she assumes the second highest office in the land, Celia Meyer goes off-roading.
Jeep.
Sarah D. Bunting. Finally, perhaps, picky, not giving it to Nick. A student / private investigator solves crimes in between her stint as a Catholic altar server.
Veronica Mass?
Yes. And this will take us into our second score break for Nick. A reality show about one of the most dangerous professions of them all, picking pumpkins on an Alaskan crabbing ship.
Dangerous jobs or ice road truckers, picking pumpkins.
On an Alaskan crabbing ship. That is, anybody?
Deadliest Patch.
Deadliest Catch. Deadliest Patch.
Yeah, yes. I'm not dialed into those shows enough.
All right, let's get the question 30 score break.
Well, we do need to have an equalizer this time because Nick and I are tied with 8 points each, but Sarah has 7.
All right, Sarah, way to use your noodle and getting into it right now. Slipstream into the culture.
Yes, that was the plan.
It is time to answer a Trivial Pursuit card of your choice. We have the Ancient TV Box, the Somewhere in the 2000s Pop Culture 2 box, or the 90s edition box.
Pop Culture 2, please.
Pop Culture 2.
Yep.
What cartoon antihero spent an entire episode searching for his son, Stinky the Trouser Cough? I wouldn't put too much stock in the word antihero in this one.
Yeah.
Ren?
Oh, man. So close. Stimpy. What TV variety show is responsible for popularizing the expression pickin' and grinnin'?
Running through the house with a pickle in your mouth? Pickin' and grinnin'.
Pickin' and grinnin'.
Hee-haw?
Yes, hee-haw.
Wow.
I wish I was below the desk and I popped up on Zoom when I gave you the answer, but alas. What entertainment news show picked presidential cousin Billy Bush? Oh, my God. We were... Okay.
Oh,
story
yeah.
after. To replace longtime co-host Pat O'Brien.
Access Hollywood.
Access Hollywood. He would often film on the balcony just below our offices at 30 Rock when we were for Television of Pity. And we would make so much fun of him. All right. Mm-hmm. You need one more to get your 2 points. You got 3 questions to go. What crooner was brought in to play Grace's lover Leo on Will and Grace?
Harry Connick Jr.?
Yes. 2 points. You're now in the lead.
Oh.
Well done. All right, let's get back to the game. Everybody has 3 questions left, so this is anybody's game.
So it's now 8-9-8 with Sarah in the lead.
Ooh.
All right, here's your first, Tara.
Yep.
Don't make me pouty. You wouldn't like me when I'm pouty.
The Incredible Sulk.
Sarah D. Bunting. I am not a number. I am a free man who just killed a bunch of people with strychnine.
Just killed a bunch of people with strychnine? I have no idea.
I am not a number. I am a free man who just killed a bunch of people with strychnine.
We have one more steel meal. Yes.
Okay. Steel meal. The Poisoner.
The Poisoner from The Prisoner.
Oh,
yes.
The Poisoner. That's good.
You are now out of steel meals unless Dave decides to distribute his 2 steel meals. Who's to say?
So am I.
All right. Nick, a hard-drinking private investigator / superhero opens an ice cream parlor. Oh, wait. There's more. Sorry. I missed. There's more. A.K.A. Delicious.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Jessica Cones.
Jessica Cones from Jessica Jones. Yes. A.K.A. Alias. That's a fun little tag on that. All right. Tara.
Yep.
All right, this might be my favorite. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make his ass the finest ass the world has ever seen.
Well, it's the $6 million man, but I don't see where butts fit in there. The $6 million can!
Yes!
$6 million can.
I also would have flubbed that one by saying the bionic can, which I never got that right.
Sarah. Lucius and Cookie Lion decide to get out of the hip-hop producing business and take up calling baseball games instead.
Thanks, Picky. Umpire.
Umpire is correct. Back to Nick. After being in a coma for 6 years, a Johnny Smith can touch someone and determine the contents of their library.
Oh, shit. What's the show about someone being able to... It's not John from Cincinnati. That's something else.
Yeah, after being in a coma for 6 years, Johnny Smith can touch someone and determine the contents of their library.
Oh, man. Oh, I don't know.
Way back, Anthony Michael Hall.
Mm-hmm.
In the TV version of The Dead Zone, this is The Red Zone.
R-E-A-D.
Wow, even if I know the title, I don't know if I could have...
Well, we're all tied up again, guys.
All tied up. Everybody has one question to go. How exciting. Here we go. Tara.
Yeah.
Della Reese and Roma Downey will straight up set you on fire.
Torched by an angel.
Oh, Jesus. That's good. That is good.
Sarah. In Kitchen Stadium, bass competes against treble.
In Kitchen Stadium. Oh, God. Please let this be the right one. Iron Clef.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Hope you got a tiebreaker ready, Dave.
Nick, last question to regulation.
Okay.
The exploits of Babs and Buster as they let out itty bitty farts. The exploits of Babs and Buster as they let out itty bitty farts.
All right. I'm going to have to work backwards from the alteration because I'm guessing we're going toot something. But I don't know Babs and Buster toot. No.
Any guesses? Don't know any part of that? Doesn't ring a bell? Babs Sorry. And Buster, if I told you their last name was Babs and Buster Bunny, would that help you at all?
No.
Are we going from Tiny Toon Adventures to Tiny Toon?
Adventures. I was slightly too old for Tiny Toons.
All right. Score at the end of regulation, please start.
Very, very competitive game all around. Nick finished with 10 points. Sarah DeBunting and I are tied with 11.
Oh,
the
boy.
Entire season comes
Indeed.
Down to Ooh. This.
Indeed, it does. One more question. We will be adding a letter to a title of the show for the tiebreaker.
Okay.
Ooh. All right. So not changing, adding.
Adding.
Whoppers Jr.
I'm going to call an audible because I have three tiebreakers. I'm going to let Nick choose which one I'm going to give to you. So I'm going to text Nick.
Let's just say this might be a chance to reward someone who voted the correct way in the canon submission.
Interesting.
Interesting. Interesting.
I'm going to go with two.
All right. Number two. First to shout out the answer wins the game and the season. Here we go. It might not be the Twilight Zone, but it's definitely going to push your computer network to the brink. It might not be the Twilight Zone, but it's definitely going to push your computer network to the brink.
Adding a letter, right?
Yep. If you don't get it, I'm giving the game to Nick.
I chose too well.
The router limits!
The router limits from the outer limits is
well
the
router limits. I was way back on Amazing Stories.
Tara.
Showing off your singing skills to be the next big menstrual pain reliever.
American Midol.
American Midol, yes, that is correct.
That's good.
All right, well played, everybody. Tight game. We love to see it at the end of the season. And that means
well
our season
done,
winner is...
Tara. History repeats itself.
Try and you succeed. Yes! Yes. Nothing's gonna kind of keep you down. You're the best around. Around. All right. Well done, everyone.
Congratulations, Tara.
Woo. Thank you.
Well done.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Grade. we got sucked into a discussion of La Brea before going around the dial with stops at controlling Britney Spears, The Big Leap, Being James Bond, Tea with the Dames, Teen Mom, Young and Pregnant, and Squid Game. David had us create TV-based religions, and it was good. That's the second time I used that joke this month. Nick's Succession canon pick experienced a hostile takeover, while we crowned winners and losers of the week, where Tara was the winner of this week's game from Erica and won the season as well.
Woo!
Next up, it is the essential Pizza Graza on Extra Extra Hot Crate, and the next EHG Prime, it is the Many Saints of Newark. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
fuck off.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Is this the best part of the episode?
And Nick Reinwell Jones.
Buckle up, fuckleheads. We're going into the giant green vagina.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Right here on Extra Hot Crate.
I don't know about these slippers. Like, they're all plaid. Does checked mean plaid? Because then there's gingham, there's tartan. It's like a crisscross fucking minefield.